N. Ray Fort R. Jones et al. Sharp.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Terry Sharp. I represent the People's National Bank. We are here as appellants, raising before this Court two issues. The first is predominantly legal. The second is mostly factual. Turn to the legal issue first. I'd like to point out, we believe respectfully that the district court judge was erroneous in both issues. The first issue, the legal issue, is of great importance to the Illinois banking industry. On the legal side, we raised 8 points in our brief. I would like to summarize those, but the first two are clearly the most important. The statute in question says that a mortgage in Illinois may have these elements. That has been the law for over a century. Our brief points out that they also use the word shall in the same statute. It's in the adjoining statute. And common usage is the keynote of statutory construction. It's been used by this Court as recently as this year. There are some exceptions to that rule, we point out, but they're not applicable. May means one thing, shall means another. If the Court believes that may is what the legislature meant, I respectfully think I should win. Shall, the other side has some points. For over a century, the Illinois Supreme Court has interpreted this statute consistently, and that ruling is found in Bullock versus Bettenhausen, where they said the policy, though not the letter of the law of our statute, requires in all cases a statement upon the record of the amount secured. The amount secured is the key word there. And they acknowledge even that the statute doesn't require that, but they note that the policy does. And they note that this is done so that those who come along after, such as Banterra, know what there is ahead of them that they must take. I don't think the law could be much clearer than this. The bankruptcy judge agreed with me. The district court obviously disagreed.
Now, so, on the precisely what portion of loan two are you entitled to? Only up to the amount of principal from loan one?
214, okay. 046. Yeah. Yes. There are six other areas that we think support this proposition. They're all logical. We cite Hornbook treatises and encyclopedias. Representative of those comments is that a dragnet clause is conceptually a mortgage to secure future advances. Also, black letter law is the dragnet clause gives security for future advances. The authority for those statements is as basic as AmJur and CJS. Also important in this, and this is in the big picture, if you will, the restatement of mortgages in section 2.1 provides that there are three ways that a subsequent mortgagee can be bound. One of them isn't applicable, but it does provide that it secures future advances, this one does, or may state a maximum balance. At bar, cross-collateralization is spelled out, as is multiple liens spelled out, and they're both in bold print on the first page. I don't see how there can be any confusion in that matter. We cite in our brief numerous circuit court decisions interpreting the laws of the other states and a parallel provision of the Uniform Commercial Code, which is in line with the interpretation we advocate. Next, we point out that various federal agencies who loan money use the same language that is used by the case at bar. Next, interestingly enough, virtually every mortgage form in use in the state of Illinois today is in substantially the same form as the case at bar, as to the applicable portions. In fact, Appalese is identical because they use the same software system to create these mortgages. They used to be printed out or blanks filled in. Now it's all done with computers, and they're all the same. And lastly, although counsel will disagree with the impact of this, the legislature has gotten into the act since this appeal was filed, and they have now passed a statute that says that the Illinois law is and always has been a permissive matter as we advocate. We believe that this court can safely decide a matter of Illinois law based upon this evidence and this fact. However, if the court disagrees, then we would join with Appalee in asking that the case be certified to the Illinois Supreme Court, as we've indicated in a brief. Turning to the more fact-intensive portion of our argument, the debtors provided Banterra with a financial statement. Now, It either did not disclose people's debt or it confused it. I'll have more about that in a moment. But they did have that information, and they knew that there's money owed to People's Bank. Secondly, they gave Banterra the right to access their credit report. Banterra did not stipulate, this case went up on stipulated facts, was heard on stipulated facts, did not stipulate and put in the record the credit report. We said in our opening brief that they didn't get one. They replied that they did. I went back and read the record, and there is reference in the record that they did get a credit report. But respectfully, they didn't read it or didn't understand it or both. Third, before making the loan, Banterra received a title commitment. And that title commitment provided for the lien of People's Bank and such other sums as provided therein, the $214,044.26. No question about it. If they had read that mortgage, they would have seen, just like on the forms that they used, in the very first paragraph, in bold type, maximum lien, at no time shall the principal amount of indebtedness secured by the mortgage, not including sums advanced to protect the security of the mortgage, exceed $214,044.26. Later, Banterra apparently decided to rewrite the mortgage, and they got an updated title report that's referred to in the record as a letter report. And it again points out that there is a mortgage out there given to People's Bank to secure 214 and such other sums. Perhaps, based upon that, Banterra refinanced the first mortgage. And in that first refinance mortgage, they provide the lien of this mortgage securing the indebtedness may be secondary and inferior to an existing lien. They can't logically put that there unless they know a people's lien. Now, Banterra admittedly had to admit that they intended to get a release of the people's mortgage. They tendered the document. It didn't get signed. It never happened. This case is not on intent. It's on what happened. And they didn't get it. Now, all of this is inquiry notice. You've been told about it twice. You intend to get it. You knew about it. It's at their maximum. And their inquiry could have been so simple as pick up the phone and call People's Bank, which happens to be a half mile away in a small town. When you summarize all this, had they gotten the subordination that they intended, or if they'd paid off the loan so they would clearly have a first lien that they intended to get, and their documents, their credit analysis, full of analysis, the first real estate mortgage that they intended. There's no question that they did intend that. They just didn't get it, and the conflict goes away. The court have any questions as to our position?
Banterra's, the briefing started down a line in which there was, I think, clarification of people's, of the parties' positions. Banterra eventually said that cross-collateral, unspecified provision would still be valid, but their position is it's valid only as to the lender and the debtor, not as to some third-party creditor. I'm not sure I understand your response, but your response, as I understood it, was if that's the case and somebody goes into bankruptcy, their interpretation would block the trustee as well. Is that your view?
If Banterra's position prevails,
yeah,
then all these cross-collateralization clauses would be subject to attack by bankruptcy trustees. And that's very important, I think, that and it ties into the question asked previously. It is up to an amount that's stated in the principal, as has been directed by the Illinois Supreme Court for over a century. So you know what you've got ahead of you on that property. And particularly where property increases in value and mortgages are paid down, you can still look to the face of that mortgage and say, whatever is out there, I've got to pay the first $214,000 to the previous mortgage holder or get the subordination they intended to get. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. May it please the court, opposing counsel Sharp.
My name is James L. Van Winkle. I represent Banterra Bank. The real crux of the issue before the court today is the adequate and proper disclosure in all fairness to subordinate creditors of a cross-collateralization clause. This is not a case about whether or not the mortgage itself is valid or not valid on the original note. Factually, the note was dated November 1 of 2004 in the amount of $214,044. The note was defined as a specific note. The debt secured by the mortgage was defined to be the note, and the maximum indebtedness was exactly equal to the note itself. So as a practical matter, the day the mortgage was signed, that mortgage could not have secured any other debt. Contrary to what Mr. Sharp has indicated, I think the history and the policy of the Illinois courts regarding a description of the indebtedness as laid down by the Bullock case that has been followed all the way up through even our recent bankruptcy decisions in Ray Berg requires that there be an adequate description of the debt that is secured by the mortgage. And in this particular case, there was no adequate description. In fact, if you look at the cross-collateralization clause, you can see that there's no description whatsoever. Just assume for the moment that you eliminated the maximum indebtedness clause and the mortgage said, well, this secures any and all debt. Well, obviously, Bullock and all the progeny from Bullock would hold that that mortgage is unenforceable because it's not an adequate description. Well, in this case, the district court found that the mortgage itself was ambiguous and contradictory because of the language, because of the way that the note was defined, because of the way the indebtedness was defined, and because of the way the maximum indebtedness was defined. So I think that on the law, Peoples is wrong in the sense that you cannot have a mortgage that simply says any and all indebtedness. On the policy, I think there is obviously, as laid down by Bullock, good reason why you have to have an adequate description of that collateral or that debt. It is to prevent people from coming up with debts later on. It's also to provide other creditors with adequate notice of what debt is out there. You can have second mortgage holders. You can have judgment lien holders. You can have other people that are considering perhaps filing suit to take a levy and garnishment attachment. They need to know what that debt is in order to gauge what their proper position is. If you look at the face of people's mortgage and you look at the terms of the mortgage, you can't tell because on its face, it's contradictory.
Well, Banterra was aware of the cross-collateralization clause that secured all future debt, right?
Banterra was aware of the mortgage
right.
In favor of people's. They were aware that there was a clause in there that contained a cross-collateralization, but they were also...
And then they receive a commitment for title insurance for its loan to the debtors that contained a special exemption for People's Mortgage 1 and noted that the mortgage secured such sum as provided therein?
Yes, and what it provided therein was the $218,000. That's the point that the district court ruled on, was that the terms of the mortgage defined the note to be a specific amount, the maximum indebtedness to be that specific amount. So the day the mortgage was granted, okay, the day the mortgage was granted, it couldn't have secured any other indebtedness.
Well, didn't Banterra's own financial analysis of the debtors show their indebtedness to other creditors in the amount of $358,000, an amount clearly over the $214,000?
But that was not the People's National Bank debt. The People's National Bank debt at that point on the $400,000 note was still $400,000.
Well, doesn't that, but isn't Banterra then on, was certainly on notice of other loans that might have been secured by the real estate at issue?
There is no indication in the record or in that credit report that that $358,000 was a debt to People's National Bank. As a matter of fact, the affidavit of Chris Mashoff establishes that Banterra did not know about the $400,000 debt. And that's what makes this case different from some of the other cases.
But here's the problem. The cross-collateralization clause in the mortgage effectively served as a form of future advance notice, right?
I don't think so, because it fails because of the contradiction in the mortgage of the maximum indebtedness. It failed to give any adequate notice. It would have been different if the mortgage would have stated, this mortgage secures a debt of $214,000. This mortgage also secures future advances of up to an additional $500,000. Then somebody is on record notice. And that's what the district court found, that if you properly draft the cross-collateralization clause and put in language to clearly show that there is other debt in the future that could be secured by this mortgage, then somebody is on proper notice. But simply having a blanket cross-collateralization clause, which by itself, I mean, you look at it, the day that the mortgage goes of record, let's assume people's had another debt out there of $100,000. Was it cross-collateralized? Obviously not, because the mortgage wouldn't allow for it. It was already past the maximum. Second off, if there was an existing debt, it would have violated the Bullock rule, because there would not have been an adequate disclosure of the terms of that mortgage, the specific amount. So I think just the general cross-collateralization clause by itself is insufficient to impart any kind of record notice or constructive notice or inquiry notice. One of the reasons why it doesn't impart notice is because if you go back and you look at Bullock and you look at all the cases that follow, every one of those dealt with mortgages that had been of record. Obviously, they were of record. You take the Flexner versus Wormer case. The note was described in terms of the parties and the date, but not the amount. And there, the court said, no, that's not adequate notice, and it's not constructive notice. The same thing in Bergman versus Bogota. If you have a mortgage that doesn't specify the date, it is not constructive notice of anything.
People, but isn't one of the purposes of this cross-collateralization clause, which is sometimes called a dragnet clause, I think, isn't one of the purposes so that the parties don't have to execute a new security agreement every time there's a further extension of credit?
Well, as between the mortgagor and the mortgagee, it may be an enforceable clause as a contract matter, but as a policy matter, as an instrument that constitutes a mortgage to secure a specific amount of debt, it fails to meet the Bullock test. And real estate is different from the UCC. Real estate records and the law of Illinois for the past 130 years is dramatically different from what the Uniform Commercial Code allows for. So although dragnet clauses may be favored under the UCC and they may be enforceable under the UCC, that kind of dragnet clause, I don't believe, is valid as against third parties who do not have actual notice. There's a difference. If you have actual notice of the debt, as in the Sahara Manning case and one of the other cases, then you're talking about a situation where, yes, it is in fact enforceable. But here, Banterra had no actual notice or knowledge of the $400,000 debt, and that's what precludes that clause from being effective.
So your bottom line is that you must have actual or constructive notice, and it's not sufficient to have inquiry notice.
I don't believe that under the Bullock decision that is sufficient, that it takes more than that, and especially under the facts of these cases where you've got the maximum debt and the note itself being one and the same. Most commercial mortgages that provide for future advances will have a future advance clause. Section 39 of the Conveyance Act allows for that, but you have to have a specific reference in there, and you have to describe the terms and conditions and the amount of that future advance. Well, if you apply that standard to the cross-collateralization clause, it doesn't apply. It's just not there. And so I think that as a result, people's mortgage as to the cross-collateralization fails. Mr. Sharp also raised the fact that the legislature had passed Senate Bill 0016. I don't think, A, it applies, but B, it raises more problems than it solves. Because if you look at the language of the bill that got enacted and enrolled by the governor, it effectively says that nothing in Section A is mandatory. That means you don't have to have the name of the mortgagor, You don't have to have the name of the mortgagee. You don't have to have a date. You don't have to have an amount. You don't have to have a legal description. You don't have to have a signature of the mortgagor. They have totally eviscerated the purpose and the policy behind Section 11 of the Conveyance Act. Now, perhaps that's not what the legislature meant. I think that law was passed in response to the N. Ray Crane case, where the court had ruled that the mortgage was not enforceable because of the absence of the interest rate and the maturity. There are other cases that have been decided by the Illinois courts that have sustained mortgages when the interest rate and maturity date were missing, but no case has ever sustained a mortgage where the amount secured, a description of that debt, has been omitted from the mortgage. And so you're faced with a situation with this new statute. Does it mean really that you're permitted to omit the interest rate and the due date and it's still enforceable and you have to have the rest of these things? Or can the alternative is you've got a statute that simply says, I mortgage all my land to so-and-so for all my debts, and that's sufficient. And I think under the policy enunciated by Bullock, it's not sufficient. And contrary to what the legislation says, that it was always permissive, it's just not the case. That's not been the history of the case law. So I believe that, A, the statute doesn't have effect, and, B, if we look at the law that would apply to this particular transaction, it's Bullock, and under Bullock, that mortgage fails to meet the test. Any further questions from the court?
Does Banterra have mortgages?
Yes. Banterra has mortgages.
And cross-collateralization.
We have cross-collateralization clauses. And our position is as between Banterra and our customer, those cross-collateralization clauses are valid. But if the cross-collateralization clause is like the one in People's Mortgage, it's not valid. If the cross-collateralization clause says this note secures whatever prior indebtedness, it's Banterra's position that the prior indebtedness has to be spelled out. And if it's to secure future advances, it has to be clearly spelled out that it's for future advances and how much those future advances are. I mean, as a policy consideration, you know, these small community banks often shore up inventory and equipment notes with second mortgages. If you've got this unlimited advance clause, then all of a sudden you don't have the ability to make those kinds of advances.
But if you had notice of the first loan, then you have the ability to find out about those exact amounts.
Banterra had notice of the first 214. It had no notice or knowledge of the second loan for $400,000. And if simply recording an instrument that says we may be owed money is applicable, then the recording statute becomes the eviscerated version of the statute now, which is you can record anything, and you don't have to have an amount or a date or names of parties or legal descriptions. I mean, it makes the real estate record system unworkable, and it's a system that's worked well for the last 130 years. Any further questions? I thank the court.
Thank you, counsel.
So, counsel, why don't you begin in that last area that we left off on and why holding in your favor would eviscerate the whole system that's been in existence for over 100 years?
Well, our position is, Your Honor, is that that is exactly what we have, and we're asking you, this court, to support. For example, a question was asked during his discussion, and they know about 214. Mm-hmm. The practice in the industry is to pick up the phone or send a letter, please send us a payoff amount so you can get a release of this mortgage. The reason I made the point in my opening comments, they intend to get a subordination agreement, which avoids the issue, or you pay it off. That is the practice in the industry. And for that reason, and again, as to Bullock, he says that the 04 mortgage, which is our mortgage, could not have secured anything else. Well, respectfully, that's just not true, because if you have that rule, which he claims it is the rule, and I don't think it is, you could never have a future advance or dragnet clause. The purpose of it is to take care of any loans that are made in the future. As he correctly pointed out, it doesn't include those from the past, only those in the future, and that is the accepted practice that we ask this court to sustain. he raised the point in his reply, his brief, that there was a credit report, and this forced me to go back and look through the record. And I hate to cite to the record at this level, but I must. At page 128 of the record, the financial...
It's better to be able to cite it than not, though.
Pardon?
It's better to be able to cite it than not.
Thank you, Your Honor. At page 128 of the record, there is a financial statement that was given to Banterra to obtain the loan in question that they have. First of all, it is on a People's National Bank form. Second of all, it shows total liabilities of $884,000. At page 136 of the record, they transpose that onto their credit analysis report, $884,000 of debt. But at page 137, they note, and this is one of the references to the credit bureau where I have to concede, I was wrong in my briefing, apologize, $358,000 of credit on the credit bureau report. Now, there's a difference there of $500,000. They may not, Mr. Jones may not specifically mention the $400,000 that he owed People's Bank, but he used the People's Bank form, and he showed an extra $500,000 over and above what the credit report does, which is why I made the comment that they must not have read what they did have before them, because it was there. We didn't fool them. Our forms didn't fool them, same forms that they used. They were fooled within their own back room, not reading the record. And in those same documents, at page 136 and 138, there's two different notations. One, REM, which is the trade term for first real estate mortgage. That's what they wanted. They didn't get it. And because they didn't get it, now they're arguing about the cross-collateralization clause, which is the same that's in their documents. The question was asked about the maximum, or comment was made about the maximum lien of the current balance. If that were the rule other than what it is, then you had a mortgage that had a variable interest rate, and this court has dealt with variable interest rate mortgages recently, it wouldn't be possible to know what the balance is. Also, there could be payoffs. The mortgagee could advance money for taxes, et cetera. These factors mean that the rule needs to be flexible, which is what it is. Now, something was also asked about cross-collateralizations. A mortgage is put of record to protect the lending institution against judgment creditors and bankruptcy trustees. When he concedes that, well, that cross-collateralization clause in a mortgage is good against the borrower or the debtor, that is meaningless. The reason it's there is to provide information against trustees. And back to the Bullock decision, so that he, the Banterra, will know subject to what they must take, that's $214,000. Banterra, in their brief, on 18 different occasions, shouts that they are without notice and bona fide purchaser. Respectfully, that is not a fair categorization of their position. They had lots of notice, chose not to follow it, or alternately misfollowed it. Does the court have any questions?
Thank you, counsel. Again, thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.